Hi, this is Jean-Jacques Taylor, and you're listening to Jock Talk. This is a podcast where I talk about the Cowboys, the team I've covered as a beat writer, columnist, TV insider, and radio host for 28 years. I'll also talk about the NFL and the things I love, working out, streaming, food, and all things Dallas. My boy Big Joe and the Big Rig, one of my oldest friends, produces the show and occasionally chimes in with his thoughts on the Cowboys. After all, he's a lifelong Cowboys fan, and he played high school, college, and semi-pro football. Welcome to Jock Talk, where sports is fluid. What's true today might not be true an hour, a day, or a month from now. I'm going to give you the truth straight. No chaser. Glad to have you aboard. Let's get it. Welcome, my friends, to episode 108 of Jock Talk. I'm Jean-Jacques Taylor, joined by my boy Big Joe and the Big Rig. Episode 108. This can only be Troy Aikman. We don't even need to talk about nobody else, though.
That's it.
So what's the sit rep?
Let's see. After a hard-fought war with the technical difficulties, we are 1 minute in, and we are 5x5.
Yeah, we'll tell y'all about the technical difficulties at another date, but they was long and it was hard, but we emerged victorious. Your Dallas Mavericks, Doc, 116-109 victors today. I'm sorry, 116-107 victors today over Minnesota. I knew it was going to be a dogfight. I knew it was going to be tough. But they are one game away from the NBA Finals. And I got to say, I got to ask this question. Did you see this coming at all?
No.
Let me interrupt you for 1 second. I ask this because teams that lead 3-0 in the NBA playoffs are 154-0. The last time the Mavericks led 3-0 in a conference finals, I was at the scene of the Memorial Day Massacre, Dallas style, where they put the Lakers away with Peja Stojakovic and Jason Terry combining for about 15 threes. I can't even remember how big the win was. It was like 40 or 50 points over the Lakers. So back to my original point, which was, did you see any of this coming?
Hell no. No, sir. Not at all. I thought we had a chance to win the series, but 3-0?
I'm talking about the whole playoff run.
Oh, the run? Yeah, I saw the run, but I can see that happening. We talked earlier in the season before the playoffs even started how they had fun playing together, how they respected each other, how they got along so well. The whole Kyrie, Luka coexisting thing, I didn't see that coming. I thought we'd have Kyrie for 1 year, dump him, use his salary to try to recruit other superstars.
Right.
It's the first time, correct me if I'm wrong, it's the first time in the Mark Cuban era that we were actually able to land a superstar after trying many years.
That's a hard thing to say because, I mean, I think what happened is they tried at various times to land the sidekick, the Batman and Robin combo. Like, Porzingis was an attempt to land a guy who could play with Luka and who could elevate. That's what the attempt was. It didn't work, but it was they shot their shot. The only reason, you know, this is a good conversation, because why is the only reason you were able to get somebody like Kyrie? Because he acted a fool in Boston and he acted a fool in Brooklyn, and everybody's like, you know what? You had this fool.
Porzingis was kind of the same way. He was in trouble. He was injured. Kyrie, but I never trusted that.
Porzingis was hurt. That ain't really nobody's fault. Don't nobody want to be hurt.
He got thrown through a window before he came here. He was fighting and shit in the streets. He was fighting.
Well, his biggest problem was he was fighting with Luka. And that's not a fight you can win.
Roger that.
And even with Dirk, the Mavericks tried forever to link somebody with him. They didn't have a lot of success in free agency, but sometimes, man, you luck into these moves and they work.
Yeah.
And they lucked into Kyrie. They facilitated the trade and they did it because we've talked about this before. Jason Kidd was his idol. Nico Harrison knew him on the AAU circuit. I didn't realize this. Brad Townsend from Dallas Morning News put in a story, but Guy Sham Guy is one of his closest friends too. He's been an assistant ball handling coach of the Mavericks for probably almost a decade now.
Yeah.
So that's another guy who, that's his boy. And so he came into a situation where he's completely comfortable. And I don't think a lot of y'all realize this, man. The hardest thing for professional athletes to do, now check this out now, is to trust the organization. Because the organization is always about itself. They get rid of you as soon as, you know, as soon as you lose a step or your jumper don't fall or whatever. They trade you at a moment's notice. They say that they will and they won't. They might make contract promises and then don't follow. The organization will, you know, organization will tell you and do whatever it must do to pacify you at a moment because it's the organization. In most cases, well, he came to an organization where all the people in charge are what? His boys. And so he doesn't have to worry about that. And I think it gives him a comfort level. And then he also came to probably one of just two or three organizations out of professional sports where the owner, the team owner, is really dying for the players. Like Mark Cuban is not your classic professional sports owner. You know, he's just not. And, you know, we don't have to spend a whole lot of time explaining it because y'all can see him jumping around, wearing a T-shirt, sitting with the – I mean, he's just not. And so he brings a whole different vibe to it. And so what I'm saying is Kyrie's in a situation where he could trust everything around him, and all he had to do was mature and play basketball. And that's what he's done. And now the guy who always – check this out, man. Check this out. The guy who always wanted his own team – this is Luka's team – but Luke was like, oh, you know what, dog? Here, have some of it. He's like, really? He's like, yeah. He's like, oh, okay, cool. Appreciate you. And now the team that he wanted, because he always wanted to be a leader. He couldn't be a leader with LeBron there because it's LeBron's team.
I wonder if he'll give LeBron any credit for what's going on with him now. Because he's being LeBron. I mean, he's being LeBron to Luka. Because remember, LeBron kind of brought him along. Let him do clutch stuff, and it tried to be the leader to Kyrie. Kyrie wasn't feeling that thing.
We've said that you're not at 22. You're not going to be like that. At 22, you're trying to prove I can be that dude. I can be Michael Jordan. I can be a star. I can be the best player. At 32, you've already done all of that. Now you just want to win.
Yeah.
You know, and Luka right now. When Luka is 32, if there's some young Luka around there, after he's done all of this, he's going to be, I just want to win, dog. If you want to take over and dominate and you have earned and you have shown me that you are worthy of that kind of respect, then, hey, go ahead, young fella, go do your thing. But the young Bulls are not going to do that. That's why what's really unique about this is that, to me, is that Luka has willingly given up some of his shine to Kyrie, and it hasn't been an issue. And I think that's because Kyrie was deferential initially, like, yo, it's your team, dog. Let me get in where I fit in, how you need me, what would you like for me to do?
It's kind of like Shaq and Dwayne Wade.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. That's a great example. Yeah. Matter of fact, man, I had to sit – one of my partners the other day, we were having a meeting about something else, and we started talking about basketball. Yeah, man, I don't know why – Luka got to dribble the ball all the time. He need to turn it over to Kyrie. I was like, what are you talking about, man? I said, why are you trying to divide a team that's winning, dog?
Yeah.
I said, why are you trying to do that, man? They don't seem to have any problem with the way the games are breaking down at the end and how Kyrie is taking over at some points and then Luka takes over. So they don't have any problem with the. Why are you creating a problem, dog? They've been winning basically almost every game they played since, like, the middle of March. Like, why are you being disruptive, man? Just sit back and enjoy it. But as we get back to the game today, you saw it, man. They, you know, they've been on a roll. I was trying to look it up since the middle of March, and they ended the season on this fantastic stretch. And they are, to me, the classic case of a team that got hot down the stretch. Usually we see this in the NFL. A team that gets hot the last 6 weeks of the season, they carry it on into the playoffs. To me, this is what the Mavericks have done. They got hot, and they just carried it on into the playoffs. They have these two superstars, so they always have an air of confidence about them. They don't panic when they lose because they have these superstars. And I'm here to tell you, Doug, they got to get one more. I believe they will. But Boston-Dallas... we set up for an epic series, man, because Kyrie going back to Boston. You got Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum, The young dynamic duo facing Kyrie and Luka. Whoo! It's going to be delicious, man. It's going to be great. And we got plenty of time to talk about that once they actually win game four and once the series is set. But the way this series has played out, and kind of like the way I was looking at the way the Thunder series played out, you know, the first quarter always seems to be very interesting in terms of, you know, whether one team is going to get off and dominate or whether it's, you know, whether the road team can survive the early surge. And this game, I got to talk about this, dog. I want your opinion. This game was the first game, and I'm not even surprised because Tony Brothers was the ref. That the ref, yeah, I mean, he just felt compelled to make himself the focal point of attention, dog. Did you feel that?
Yeah, he was calling a lot of BS.
Dog, and that whole thing about
attitude, all of that.
Yeah, dude, ain't nobody, you know, I'm sorry, but I give a fuck about you, man. Ain't nobody paid no money talking about, oh, Tony Brothers is reffing today. Wow, can't wait to see him. This whole thing, he pointed people, telling me to sit down. I mean, just come on, man. I mean, the magnitude of that dude's ego, my goodness. And I say that because the game didn't have no flow to it. It was all herky-jerky because he controlling everything.
Yeah, and baseball and basketball, the umps and the refs are so visible.
Dude.
You know what I'm saying? That's just, yeah, that whole ego thing. Football, a little bit. But yeah. Baseball and basketball, them guys got the big ego, and they just change up the whole perspective of the game with their actions. It's crazy.
It's terrible because they took the flow out the game. Yep. And then at the end, they won't call nothing. They playing playground basketball, no blood, no foul at the end.
Yeah.
And it's just like, come on, man. I mean, come on. And so, you know, I think it's been terrific basketball all three games. The Mavericks just happen to have the better set of closers. But how did you feel when the Mavs are up by 12 at halftime or 10 at halftime, yet Derek Lively Jr., the second, is out?
Man, I thought, well, we up. We going to let up, you know what I'm saying? With that guy out, and we you know, with part of the dynamic duo out and us being up, and I wondered, are they going to cruise in the second half? Are they going to let them back in it? What's going to happen? That's kind of what – that's always the mystery. Can we hold this? Because the adjustments at halftime, and you got to remember the guys on the other side are pro players too.
Well, that's what I said. I'm always – you know me, man. I become, you know, obtuse sometimes over words. Like, I don't necessarily think you cruise or you let up, but the other – like, Minnesota know it's a wrap if we don't win this game. So, at halftime, they down by eight. They like, Lively is out. Anthony's playing better. Cat can't score. He still can't do nothing. But we in the game. You know, so I think they played with a level of desperation because they know it's over if you're down 3-0.
But when you lose, when teams lose a 20-point lead or a 12-point lead, there's a reason for that. There's a lack of intensity or lack of concentration. What consists of what you let us, there's a list of things that say you are letting up. You start turning the ball over. You don't switch on time. You don't hustle on the play. You don't get back and you go, well, we still up by 11. Oh, yeah. We still up by 7. And you just start letting people go on runs. So that's what creates the let up. All the things I just said create the let up. It ain't just like you just say, hey, I'm screwed. I'm just not going to.
No, but sometimes I think it's a – sometimes it can be a – all the things can be correct. Sometimes it is a combination of all the things you just said. Sometimes all of those things happen because, I mean, this becomes a chicken or egg theory. Did I turn up the intensity on my team because I was down by 20, or did you let up because you was up by 20? And I think each individual case is the same. You know, this is a really good defensive team. So sometimes they can create some turnovers. The Mavericks can be sloppy with the ball in general on occasion. But I think you knew the Timberwolves were going to make a run. It was just a matter of when they made the run, were they going to surge ahead and go up 6 or 8, or when they made the run, was it going to go back and forth you know, to see how the game played out. But I thought it was going to be set up for a great finish because they went into the fourth quarter tied. And I was concerned about the Mavericks because without Lively Jr., you saw Minnesota getting a lot more offensive rebounds. When Gafford went out, they attacked the bucket because there was no rim protector. You're like, oh, sheesh, this looked like the old Mavericks right here. People just running through the lane like it ain't nothing.
Put Powell back in.
And that helped a little bit, although, dude, I think he gave it his best shot, but he was not equipped for the physicality of this particular series because he was all over. They was tossing him around like a rag doll.
Yeah.
And not just because he was skinny. I think just, you know, when you've been on the bench and then you jump into the middle of this thing going on right here, that's a whole, I think it's just a whole different world.
It's funny when you look down the bench and go, oh, damn, we got to go back to him. All right.
Well, you know what? I think he can be, he can be a useful part in certain situations. But tonight was not one of them for the most part. Although he gave them a body that they could use a little bit, because Gafford was not having his best game. But in the fourth quarter, man, the game was tied. I thought that meant the Mavericks were going to win. What did you think?
Yeah, because what we talk about, what's the obvious thing? They got two closers. You know, what did your boy say? Reggie said you got Dennis Eckersley and Mariano Rivera on the same team.
It's dude. I mean, I ain't breaking no news here, but I've been saying it for a minute that's why they are a problem. Once PJ and Gafford got here, and once the team kind of figured out their roles and like, okay, how we gonna play? Okay, this is how we gonna play? Blase, blase. Dude, there's a reason why they went 23-9 in clutch games. I think that was the best record in the NBA. And it's because at the end of the game, and Charles Barkley made a great point in the post-game show. And he basically, he made an eloquent statement about what I've been trying to say and haven't been able to say it the way he said it, which is when you have Luka and you have Kyrie, because they are dominant offensive players, they almost always get the shot they want. And it's just a matter of whether they make it or miss it, which is like every great offensive player. They, you know, what did Luka say after the game when he hit the shot in game two? I got to my spot.
Yeah.
So you literally can't keep a great offensive player from getting to a spot 99.9% of the time. That's why they're great offensive players.
I got to my spot. What does that mean for him? He got about 19 spots.
Dog. No, for real.
Yeah.
And you know what's interesting? His spot used to be the three-pointer, like 28 feet on the left wing.
Yeah.
He done moved that thing to 28 feet on the right wing now. Yeah. I think it's because people started taking the left one away.
Yeah.
And
I got to my spot, Luka. What you talking about, man?
Now, you right,
Kyrie,
though.
What you talking about? What about the three Kyrie hit against the Clippers where he danced on them? And then they went everybody went left, and he just kind of slipped over to
but
the
right
corner. But you know
what? Bam. It's rare in game two he hit a jumper from corner three from the left corner. Normally, he hits them from the right corner when he takes them. But the point is that both of those guys between them probably got about 20 spots on the court.
Yeah. Can I say something?
And you – yeah.
Let me interrupt you right quick. I feel like a damn fool because every time I played 2K with the Mavericks, Kyrie was my first casualty. I traded him for a can of beer. I feel dumb. I got to go back and play with them again. That's all. That's the PSA for me. I'm a dumbass sometimes. It's usually in the privacy of my own home, though. So,
I like that.
Yeah.
And so, you know, so it goes in the fourth quarter. I don't even think people realize Kyrie scored. Kyrie finished up with, I want to make sure I get this right.
31?
No, he finished up with – I wanted some more. He finished up with 33 points,
yeah,
four assists. He had 19 points going into the fourth quarter. He scored 14 in the fourth quarter. Like, I don't even think people realize he scored 14 in the fourth quarter.
I do because he became – see that 31 and 4? That's the reverse of what he was doing. He was doing 11-7, 11-8. Yeah. You know what? I like the fact that he shifted gears and said, "You know what? I'm gonna be the old me tonight. I'm gonna score tonight." You know what I'm saying? That's just versatility, man. Right there, dog.
I think it's this, because Luka ended up with 33 points. He had 26 going into the fourth quarter. Oklahoma City required a different type of game to win. Mm-hmm. Minnesota required a different type of game to win, and Boston, if both teams take care of business as we expect, will require a different type of game to win. The good thing for the Mavericks is when you have two of the best in the world, the way that they play, their game is adaptable. Because don't forget, the reality of it is they're both point guards. And so you playing a game with two point guards, and so they see the game clearly. They don't mind disseminating the ball because their point guard mentality, their point guard nature, makes it easy for them to give up the rock. And then they're also scorers. They like scoring points. I mean, they – dude, man. Again, I'm going to say this. If Kyrie hadn't been acting a fool, they never would have got him, because the teams never would have traded him. Because he's always been one of the best players in the league. But now that he's happy, now that he's settled down, dude. And then they went out and very quickly put a really nice set of role players around him. And they a problem right now, man, because they're playing with so much confidence and belief in themselves. They don't mail it in when they lose a game in a playoff series. They're winning it. They're putting their best performances together, winning time. They've turned into a really nice defensive team. I don't know if they're going to win a championship, but they're going to be a problem.
Well, they went from playing with house money to being the house.
Yeah, I like that.
You know, that's what I think, because did we think they was going to beat the Clippers? Maybe. And they beat the Clippers. Did we think they was going to beat Oklahoma? Maybe. They weren't supposed to.
Right, they weren't supposed to.
Nah, and they did. So now they whooping the hell out of Minnesota. Now you the house. You know, there ain't none of that. Well, maybe the Mavericks, you know. Maybe, you know, we lucky to be here. Nah, y'all kicking people ass for real.
Dude, and now we got a chance. I don't want to get too excited, but we got a chance to have some real fun around here. Because the Stars played their best the second half of the Stars game. Second part of the second period and the third period, Stars got in that ass, and they were playing. They were playing hockey the way they've been playing, and so they're still a better team than Edmonton. They still got to win the series. It's tied up at one, but we got a real good chance, bro. Real good chance of having some long nights as both teams go for championships.
Yeah. I'm gonna have to break out that doggone program, the press guy for the doggone Stars.
I mean, I tried to send you a little clip to yesterday to get you caught up.
Yeah. Well, I did the same thing for the Rangers. I was a Ranger guy by the time they made it to the championship. I was in there. I'm still in there. But yeah, I know the third line of the Stars. You know, by the time they get it going up in there.
Well, that's what's important, man. That's what's important. And so when we talk about Derek Lively Jr., he was off to a great start, man. Great start. I think he had 6 points and 2 rebounds and a couple of blocks.
Some assists, too.
And, you know, it's really evident now that he feels very comfortable when they attack the double team and they give him the ball at the top of the key. Either turning left or right and making that pass to the corner, or taking a one dribble and going to the bucket. And so, you know.
Well, the staff they got is incredible. Tyson Chandler is teaching him. Tyson Chandler, one of the best rebounders, best rebounding centers of all time, I think. He can teach a class on rebounding. And I think he's showing that to your boy. And one of the best defensive centers of his era.
I think you make a good point on the staff, man, because somebody on Twitter, and I forget who it was, so forgive me, was pointing out And I'm going back to game two for just a minute. The play on how, you know, after the game, Jason Kidd said, oh, I was just letting Luka dance.
Yes.
Well, the play was deeper than that. And this guy broke it down. He said, give Jason Kidd credit. Yeah, he put the ball in Luka's hands. But if you go back and look at the play, once they get the pick and roll with Derek Lively, and Lively does a really good part of when he goes on a roll, he pushes your boy out the way. So there is no chance for him to come back.
Yeah,
it has to be Gobert.
Yeah, he hit him. Yeah.
And then if you look at the play, everybody else on the team went down to the baseline. They went like four flat down near the baseline. So there was no chance for anybody to leave and help. Because what happened is if you leave and help, what's going to happen? Luka going to find a dude for a layup or a dunk. And so the play design meant once the switch was made and Lively made sure you had no choice but to make the switch, there was nothing you could do to help him. He was by himself. This just make a miss. And so that to me goes to the coaching staff of not only understanding, yo, let's get him the ball, but okay, hey, here's a play design to help you do what you do best. And, you know, when, you know, I put this out on Twitter tonight. I'm sick of people saying, and they continue to say it, although it's less loud right now, you know, that Jason Kidd is a robot. He just sits there and watches the game. I mean, there was some camera angles during the fourth quarter that if you looked at the where you could see Kidd on the sideline, if you think that dude wasn't exerting energy coaching defense on the, like, he don't exert a lot of energy coaching offense during the game. He exerts his energy coaching defense during the game. And did you see when Luka hit the fall-away jumper, he, just like he did in the last year, he picked him up and pushed his ass back out on the court? Jay Kidd's involved, man.
If you don't – see, a lot of people go off what they see on TV.
Yeah.
You won't see that on TV. You know, you won't – if you go to games, which I don't go to games, but if you go to games – like me and you talked about before, you can see all of that. And yeah. I wonder if the people that are saying he's a robot don't get to see the transition between him on, that. You know, when the Mavericks are on right. defense and when they're on offense. I mean, he knows, as a coach and a former point guard, you can overcoach the point guard, i.e. right. Rondo and Rick Carlisle.
Boom. Boom.
Rondo was not having it, dog.
No.
You know, that's crazy. Now, Tyrese Halliburton is taking the coaching, but he was a young cat. He broke him in. He traded for him and broke him in. But, you know, you can overcoach the point guard. Jim Clemens did that crap for, you know, like crazy. I'm bringing up his name.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so Jason don't do that. He leave the flow of the offense up to them guys. But on defense, he damn sure going to tell you, hey, do this, do that. They're not seeing what he see.
Right.
You know, so.
You got that. And then, you know, again, man, what has happened with the rotation? Tim Hardaway Jr. got 1 minute tonight. No, I'm sorry. He got a DNP, coach's decision tonight. Dante Exum acting like he was a little scared out there the other day. He got 1 minute. They didn't put Jalen Hardy in the game. And you know why? He ain't scared. Now, I'm not saying he make all the best decisions all time, but I'm telling y'all, you can tell the way he plays, he ain't scared of nothing.
Well, Exum is, hey, I improved my game. I'm back in the NBA. So if he's going. He more of a confidence guy. Tim is more of if I'm hot, I'm hot. So both of them guys got reason to sit their ass down.
Right.
You know, but, so it is what it is. You know, you get them young boys. What's my man's name? Green?
Oh, Green's doing a nice job.
Green bring that energy. Now, he do stupid stuff too, but he bring that energy.
He do it 100 miles an hour like the coach say you're supposed to do.
Yeah, yeah.
But Hardy gives him an offensive guy who can score. And who attacks the bucket. And, you know, there's a good example of when he got matched up with Rudy Gobert. I think it was in the third quarter. And Luke was like, go! You know, it wasn't like, give me the ball back. He's like, nah, dog, you got the matchup. Go take his ass. And you know, Hardy ain't never missed a shot he ain't like. Which is why I say he ain't
never seen a shot he ain't like.
Nah, he ain't never seen one either.
You said missed a shot he ain't like.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I know what you meant.
But that's all part of not being scared. He's not tentative, which is why you can play him even though he's a young guy. I think he's 20 years old, second year in the NBA. Didn't even play that much during the regular season. But you can put him out there right now because he's going to attack and be aggressive and give you what he got.
Well, you playing for it. When you that age and you that young in the league, you playing for your future.
Yeah, and his future is very bright in Dallas because I think, for whatever it's worth, he'll either be a really nice rotational piece next year, or you can look and see what you need and trade him for that, because I think he will have some value based off what he's shown now and what he you know. He ain't. I mean, he's been in the G League, but he'll score 28 points a game in the G League, and so you know he don't need to be in the G League no more. He's proved he can dominate down there. It's just a matter of where he's going to find a role in the NBA and an opportunity to play. You know, one cat we ain't talked about really is Anthony Edwards. 43 minutes, 11 of 24 from the field, 26 points, 9 rebounds, 9 assists. Much more aggressive today. Only took 2 3-pointers. And he had a poster of posters on Gafford in the third quarter that during a run that helped the Timberwolves take a lead. But even though he did that, man, he had that spurt in the third quarter, but he did not dominate the game. I think Derrick Jones Jr., P.J. Washington had both done a terrific job of just controlling him and making him take some tough shots. Some contested shots, and, you know, he getting his points, but he's not dominating the game, and that's one reason why the Mavericks are winning these close games in the fourth quarter.
The question I have for him, and I talked to my cousin. We talked about, you know, he's a basketball player. We talked about it. I said, you think Edwards is the fatigue that he has, is he going to be able to get some rest between games, or is it that ongoing fatigue? You know, where he's wearing down. And I think it might be the latter. It might be the ongoing fatigue. That he had some dunks, but to sustain the offense like he had to do against Denver, he can't do that every game. He can't do that against the Mavericks. He's gonna need some better help. And that's your boy. That's Cat. That's Cat.
Who's been awful.
Yeah, he's not a four, man. And he could be a better four. He could, if Gobert is not in the lane all the time.
Well, you know, that was the talk on the post-game show, was like your last adjustment, the last card you can play if you're Minnesota is go small and see if you can win that way.
Yeah, because what's name, Gobert don't shoot, he can't shoot nothing from the perimeter. So when he get out the lane, you just sag off of him. Cat can't do nothing down there. Oh, Cat don't want to be on the block.
No, and you know? Can I just say this, man? Not that any of us believed it, okay? We did not believe it. But all this bullshit about you the best shooting big man ever, I mean, just stop it, dog. Stop it. Just stop it.
Who, Cat?
That's what he claimed, man.
Oh, he claimed. He claimed that?
I said none of us believed it. He claimed it, dog.
Oh, okay. He's going to know about number 41, huh?
That's what I'm saying.
Oh, okay.
The original stretch four.
Number 41 got cold-blooded when he got to mid-range.
Duh. When he had to step back, to fall back one leg.
I remember
that's when he became unstoppable.
Remember Bruce Bowen used to guard him.
Right.
And then he got the mid range and he got the post and
so yeah, but Cat is 4 for 32 on threes in this series.
Yeah, we ain't.
He had 14 points, 11 rebounds, and no impact. You know, so but you know, that Anthony Edwards, Karl Anthony Towns, their twosome, have not played their best basketball. And that's one reason. And they certainly haven't played in the fourth quarter. And that's one reason why Minnesota is down 3-0. And I think we have to talk about the defining moment before we get up out of here in the game. I want to make sure I get it right. There's a stretch. I mean, it's the fourth quarter. There's about 4 minutes left, and where is it at, man? It's the run where P.J. Washington – oh, I'm going in reverse. That's why I can't find it. It's here it is. It's 104-104. 3:38 left. And if you watched, if you remember the play, Washington hits a corner three. But it's a beautiful play because Luka gets it. He's doing his Luka thing. And he gives it to Kyrie on the wing. And Kyrie knows that PJ is locked and loaded in the corner. And he catches, it's like hot potato. Right down there to the corner. Boom. Catch and shoot. Perfect three. And, you know, that made it 107-104. But the moment I'm talking about that everybody knows is where you get the block from with 50 seconds left. It's 111-105. The Mavericks are in control. But then Mike Conley gets to the bucket. Gafford puts that thing off the backboard, blocks the shot. Mavericks get the ball. They come down. Luka weaves his way into the lane. And as only Luka can do, looks like he throws it up to the ceiling with his left hand. And out of nowhere, it seems like Gafford comes down and just throws that thing down. Crowd erupts. I got to tell y'all, I jumped off my couch like, oh, shit!
Yeah.
Because it was thunderous, man. It was just like, wow. And Gaffer's going crazy on the floor. The crowd is going crazy. The bench is going crazy. Kevin Harlan is like, dagger! And you almost never hear that off a dunk. Normally, that's like a three or something. But it was clear at that moment, like, that was a wrap right
there.
That's
when your boy Gaffer was sitting on the floor.
Yeah, pounding
going crazy.
His chest.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just a sensational play by Luka. The block was sensational. The dunk was outstanding. I mean, it was a hell of a sequence. That made it 113-105. He felt so good, he made the free throw after all that time. Because he's an average at best free throw shooter.
I think they hit 83% tonight.
Yeah, they shot 50%. So it's a hell of a win for the Mavericks. It's been a hell of a series. I mean, it's been some fantastic basketball. Now, if you're a Minnesota fan, you're a little disappointed, a lot disappointed because – they haven't been able to close in the fourth quarter. But if you're a basketball fan with no dog in the hunt, then it's been a great series to watch.
I got one 10-foot word that describes the Mavericks.
What's that?
From the front office to the players everywhere, trust.
Yeah.
Trust. Luka trusts Kyrie, and I keep saying this, but he trusts him. Where he don't have to carry the load all game, and we get a prime Luka at the end of the game because he don't have to beat Luka for four quarters.
Well, you saw it in the fourth quarter. There was a couple stretches where he missed a couple shots, and there were a couple contested shots. And the next time around, they gave the ball to Kyrie, and I think he made a drive and layup in the lane or something. Or maybe that's when he made his jumper in the corner. But it was like, okay, hold tight. They didn't figure it out for this one or two possessions how to guard Luka. So, hey, Kyrie, you take this one, you know, and go make it happen. And that's what makes them so dangerous right now, man. I mean, they are – let me just put it like this. If they can go on and finish it off and get to the finals, Boston will be the favorite, but I'm not going to sit here and tell you I'll be surprised if the Mavericks bring it home because of what you said. They're playing.
Why would Boston be the favorite? I'm not being facetious. I'm just saying, I'm really asking the question. Why would Boston be the favorite?
I would say Boston would be the favorite because they do have home court advantage. They led the NBA in wins with, I think they won 60. And okay. They went 64-18.
Yeah. Ain't nobody clutch over there.
Well, I mean, that's a different question about it. Yeah. You asked sure. Why would they be favorites?
I got you.
And then, you know, the other thing is, they got the two stars over there, and Porzingis gives him three. Although he's not a superstar and he's always hurt. But you know, so that's why they'd be the favorite. But, you know.
Barely, you think?
I don't know enough about gambling to know what barely the favorite is.
Oh, yeah, we're going off the line. I got you.
But I would say that, and the other thing is they blew the Mavericks out, I think, both times they played them this year. But I don't think they played these Mavericks.
No.
And the other thing is, and we can be honest about this, they would not be 64-18 if they played in the West.
Not at all.
I mean, they just wouldn't be. So let's be honest about that. They led the league in point differential at 11.4. But here's, so they would be the favorites. But I think, this is just me, I think the Mavericks, based on what I've seen from the Celtics from afar, the Celtics were also 37-4 at the crib. So they got, you know, they're terrific at home. But based on what I've seen, they're not what you would term by any stretch a mentally tough team. And so they got some mental flaws, and there's a lot of pressure on Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown to win something. And so all the pressure is on the Celtics to win.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Ain't nobody clutch over there, and pressure burst the pipe.
Yeah, and so, you know, they have a lot of mental lapses for a really good team. You know, like there's no way they should have had to come from 18 down to beat the Pacers without Tyrese Halliburton the other day in game 3. So they're still a young team, even though they've had they've done a lot of great things in a short period of time. I think the coaches question quite a bit. And so they'll be favored.
They question each other. That's the difference between them and the Mavericks. I mean, we getting ahead of ourselves, but that's the difference between them and the Mavericks is that when they lose, there's a lot of finger pointing. There's a lot of looking each other, staring each other down, and why you didn't do it. Mavericks don't do that. They don't do that.
Again, if you guys saw the post-game show on TNT, Gafford said it today. But he was talking about in-game when Minnesota made that run and they got the lead back. We were all staying positive and giving each other positive feedback. It's kind of funny to me that that's all the Mavericks talk about is positivity. I've literally never heard a team talk. That would be a story that you would write. Like, as long as I've been covering sports, I've never heard a team talk so much about positivity. They're like, even when we're in these film sessions, getting on each other, it's, come on, my brother, you can do better. You know, they even take a positive spin to that. Sometimes, not all the time, sometimes you get these teams that just have a cohesion about them. The 2011 Mavericks had it, man. They just have a cohesion about them and a trust and a brotherhood and a love. And, you know, it doesn't always mean you win, but when you got elite talent and you add that mix to it, you can have a special year, man.
Winning.
And, winning is of the utmost importance. But, you know, all of that together when you win, I mean, it's just, you know, that's why nobody can figure out what makes you win. You know, but when you win, these bonds grow tougher, thicker, and all this other good stuff happens. So it's a hell of a win for the Mavericks, a hell of a fourth quarter, but they got one more to go. And you don't want to play around. You want to go. Really, you want to deliver a first quarter knockout punch in game 4. You know, Minnesota knows it's over. They will come in. They will play. They will start the game as hard as they can. And if you withstand that and say, we're going to sweep your ass, and you come out strong, mentally they will sag. And they will ultimately give in. You have to make them give in, but they will give in. If you come out and play the way you play at the start of the game and start fast, they'll quit and they'll give in because, you know, they know the enormity of what they're trying to do. They're looking for any sign of life. If you eliminate that, you'll win the ball game, and we can talk about the Celtics. And the Celtics have to do the same thing with Indiana, you know. They need a little bit of life. You snuff it out because you don't want to go back to Minnesota. And then if they were to win a game, all of a sudden now it's 3-2, and now all the pressure is, oh, my God, we got to win game 3 because there's no way in the world we want to go to Minnesota for game 7. I mean, you don't even want to deal with all of that. So the way you do that is you punch them in the mouth real quick in game 4 and get it over with.
You don't want to play Rick Carlisle anyway. he's a way better coach than the Celtics guy.
I believe that, but he ain't coached worth a damn in the series right here. Yeah. He's made some uncharacteristic, what I would term uncharacteristic mistakes for a coach of his caliber in the fourth quarter, and that's part of the reason why instead of being up 2-1, they down 3-0.
Yeah.
So, we got one more game. It'll be Tuesday night. See if the Mavericks can emerge victorious. But they're in a great position. They're fun to watch, and we'll see what happens. So I think on that note, it's been a late night.
We out of here?
Yeah, dog. I do need to tell y'all to check out Season 1, Episode 1 of Jacques Talk 101 on the YouTube channel at The Real Jacques Talk. Also want to tell you, you can follow the show on IG at The Real Jacques Talk. Hit me up on Clapper. I am Jean-Jacques Taylor's the handle on Twitter at JJT Journalist. If you think you follow me, you don't, because my account's been hijacked. We want to thank our sponsor, Smokey John's Barbecue, where the food is to live for, 1820 West Mockingbird. The Jam Session Bowl, if you don't know, you need to know. Just ask for it. It's on the secret menu. For Big Joe and the Big Rig, till we chat again, you guys be blessed.